Hi, this is filmmaker BJ Colangelo, and you're listening to The Default Setting with Jess Falstick and Gigi Chick, presented by Above Below Entertainment. Default setting. We find out what makes you tick because we have ways of making you talk. I'm your host, Jess Falstick.
And I'm co-host Gigi Chick.
And today, our very special guest is a comedian, writer, Cleveland comedian scene historian, person I look to for basically everything I want to know about the Cleveland comedy scene, Mr. Jeremy Shearer. Hi.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming.
We're excited.
All right, I am going to address this right now. Is my tagline really cheesy? Because every time I say it, I look at you and you're like, smirky, 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 smirky.
No, I'm more of smirking, like,
I was like, we need a tagline because we need to,
no,
like.
No, it's more of like, teehee, but we do have ways, like.
Because that's the thing, like, we're always getting, like, either hammered or stoned on this show.
No, that's, so, like, that's me, like.
Plying people. This is actually our first sober show.
Ooh.
With our guest. I know, it's, like, super.
Sober show.
Like, well, I've been drinking for probably, like, 2 hours now, so I don't want to say it's our first entirely sober show, but our guest is entirely sober, which I'm.
That is correct.
It's probably a good thing.
It is for the best.
So Jeremy's default setting is overprotectiveness, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
It's annoying.
Okay.
Because it, basically, if you want to boil it down to where it comes from, I watched my mother die for 25 years, and there was nothing I could do about it. So I developed a control issue. It's like. Somebody is suffering. I need to be able to do something about it. And it's led me to do some seriously stupid shit over the years.
I appreciate, like, because I feel like I often have to dig to get to, like, where it comes from. And I appreciate that you just had that, like, ready to go. Was it one of those things that it didn't really develop until after her death? Or you noticed and realized that it was developing?
I noticed and realized it was developing because, you know, it was a long-term thing. She had multiple sclerosis. Okay. So. It was like, you know, it went from, we have to move to a one-story house because she is no longer going to be able to go up the stairs to, we have to put her in a nursing home because, you know, you're no longer capable of providing inexpensive care. Because, I mean, it's very difficult for somebody without, like, work-related insurance to get covered for a chronic medical condition like that. So the end result was she had to go to a nursing home and get a divorce so that Medicaid would pay for everything.
No shit.
Yeah, wow.
So with the divorce, it was a matter of, like, practicality?
Was a matter of practicality and the fact that at my father's age, people were still iffy about dating a married man, even though their sexual relationship had long since ended.
Sure.
Because, I mean, it's difficult to fuck somebody when they're shitting themselves constantly.
Right, absolutely. How long, so, like, was it a gradual decline or was it pretty, like?
It was gradual.
Okay.
And, but there were, like, moments where it stepped off. Like, she got really hurt when we lived out in Colorado.
Okay.
Went into a nursing home for a while, and that's when it started to go from relapsing, remitting, where she'd have good days and bad days, to all bad days.
All bad.
And then when she was in the home, the dementia got worse.
Okay.
So it was, there were benchmarks, but, you know, it was all a steady decline until she was gone.
And you said it was MS?
Yeah.
So is dementia, like, a pretty standard symptom of?
Yeah. I mean, I had met as, I actually went over to the UK and stayed with a woman in Scotland who had MS and she was further along than my mother was, but I still noticed some of the same symptoms and The big thing that clued me in was that she would repeat herself over the course of a long conversation, like something that she had said 7 minutes ago, she would repeat.
Short-term
like
memory. How my grandma was.
Yeah. I had a grandmother that lived to age, she was almost 101, and that was that was the thing. Like she'd ask me how old I was, and I'd tell her, And 2 minutes later, she'd ask me how old I was again, and I'd tell her. And every single time, she'd have the same reaction. And I totally remember that. So was your were your parents older, or was it just a matter of, like, they just had this condition and it just affected them earlier in life?
No, she got diagnosed when she was 40, I think. Wow. And then,
that's really early.
Yeah,
is
well,
that common for that age?
Yeah, MS is, like, it's diagnosed late 30s, early 40s most of the time.
Okay, yeah, I guess for MS, but the dementia side of it.
The dementia, she didn't get really bad until 2008, 2009, I'd say, is when she tried to fuck me. So, that's about...
She didn't recognize you as
her
son.
No, she thought I was her boyfriend taking her out on her birthday date.
Okay. Did your dad come around anymore after that, or...?
He was out in Colorado, and she had moved... Basically, what happened was this. My family had moved from Ohio to New Jersey... because my dad got a job with Merrill Lynch, and then they had him head up an office in San Francisco, which she loved. She loved California, but eventually he found a job with a private client that paid a lot more in Colorado. Okay. So they moved out there, and the decision was made to put my mother in assisted living because it would take some of the strain off of my younger sisters as far as taking care of her. In the assisted living facility that we put her in, which was a series of homes where they each had a nurse that was on call or an aide. And it turned out those aides and nurses were stealing pills and making meth in the homes. So I was out in Ohio in a relationship that involved a child. Okay. So
that was your stepdaughter?
Yeah.
Okay.
And my father called me and basically said, look, we need to get your mother out of this situation. How would you feel about taking her in? And, like, we'll find a home that suits, like, her needs and your needs. Mm-hmm. And that's what we ended up doing. We found a place with an in-law suite. I hired a girl that I used to fuck as an STNA.
Okay.
And that was like my, sorry for treating you like shit. Here's a
money
fucking job that pays better than your nursing home job where you don't have to do as much. And so that ended up going on for a couple of years until the bills just got too much. Yeah, because even though, you know, my dad does all right.
Okay. Is he still in California?
No, he's in Colorado still. He's
in Greeley,
Denver.
Is it?
I was in Greeley for a little bit, but no, he's in Denver.
Denver, okay. Yeah. Do you still keep in touch with him?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it took a while.
Yeah.
Because after the whole moving to the nursing home thing, I was just like, fuck you.
You felt like he kind of just pawned that off on you, or?
No, it wasn't the pawning off on me. It was just like, this is a death sentence.
Okay.
Because, you know, once they go into the home, then things start to go downhill.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's not, but at the same time, I couldn't be a father, a boyfriend, a comedian, a Blockbuster employee, which I was at the time, and
a
like
son.
A caretaker.
Yeah.
Because it was less of a son and more of a caretaker
role.
Sure, which, you know, I pretty much as soon as I was old enough to drive, like, that was it. Like, that's who I was.
Yeah.
So.
So it was like what for me? It just like 16 to.
She got diagnosed when I was 9.
Okay.
And then we moved to Pepper Pike because they had ranch homes there, and we were in Shaker, which is more like Tudor style.
Okay.
Homes. So time went on there, and you know, I started to pick up a little bit more responsibility, and then my father ended up moving out. Like, he couldn't handle it anymore, so that made me the man of the house, and I abused that power.
Oh, yeah?
Quite a bit.
How so?
I would steal a shit ton of money.
Okay.
And,
from him, like, in his bank accounts, or? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I did a lot of that.
Was it one of those things that you were just like, well, fuck it, I'm running shit anyway?
Yeah, it was, I'm running shit anyway. Fortunately, like, I had a pretty solid friend base, of which I'm still friends with those people today. So we weren't like too out of control. Like, we weren't shooting up in the, in my bedroom or anything, but we were going around and like eating at Denny's till 4 o'clock in the morning and using all the music. Yes.
You're a goth. Did you go to Hot Topic?
You know what? I didn't go to a Hot Topic until I went to Indy, and there was one at the Circle Center Mall,
yeah.
and that was where I first discovered Hot Topic, and the cashier tried to get us to go to a rave, and I was like, we're 15. I don't want to go to a rave.
Oh, the 90s.
I know this is so weird, like, and I've definitely shopped at Hot Topic before,
mm-hmm.
but, like... The best way I can describe it, that it has such a distinct smell.
Is it like a head shop? Do they have like a lot of patchouli? Or?
No, I'm a very sensory person. And like whenever I walk in there, even if I walked in today, to me, like if people believed in hell, like that's what hell, like to in my mind, even in my little kid mind, I'm like, that's gotta be what hell smells like. It had this like kind of grime and like really
grime
like
mixed
weird,
with candy.
Yeah, it had like this sweet, like dirt, like
mm-hmm.
weird, enticing, but like some type of, it was just, I don't know. It's the weirdest smell. To this day, it smells the exact same.
There's only like one Hot Topic left. I'm going to have to go there to see.
Is that on what, like East Lake? Because I've heard you and Jordan talk about it.
Yeah, I went out there to go see if they had ICP stuff for for a character I was playing.
Was that where like the Juggalo stuff, like is that where they bought the majority of their things?
I mean, when I was, when ICP first broke out, that's where I remember seeing it.
Okay.
I didn't really go back to Hot Topic until like I started raising a kid and like they had shit that she was into.
Okay.
I used to buy my work pants there. Like when I was
they
a barista.
Have really nice pants.
Yes. They were really expensive and like really mm-hmm. good, just like black like pants, but they weren't technically denim.
Right.
And like they were like skinny and just like whatever. Okay. I had some stretch and I was oh yeah.
You can find those at the Savers. In Parma.
Oh, shit.
Because I found a shit ton of black, not quite denim pants.
Were you just thinking they were from Hot Topic where they were... Is Savers a thrift shop?
Yeah, Savers is a thrift shop.
Yeah, they had like a little heart logo on them or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, they had stuff on the back pockets.
Yes.
And,
that's amazing.
Yeah, so I wore
that's
stuff
what with, I lived in.
Yeah.
I was like, I was more like, I was really into being like... Like, I would go to Gadzooks, and I would get, like, JNCOs and, like, the big platform shoes, and, like...
JNCOs is going out of business again.
It's devastating. Again. I had Airwalks. I had the shroom necklaces that I got at, like, Airwalks. Players and all
I
that
did have
shit.
Airwalks. I didn't
I also had Airwalks yeah. and Vans.
Yeah, Airwalks, Vans, like, all that shit I was all about. I was more of a skater kid. Like, I wore blue lipstick. Because that was the thing, like...
I was a skater.
I think if I've tried to buy stuff at Hot Topic, my mom would have, like, lost her shit. So, like, if I wore, like, big, baggy, shapeless sweaters and, like, hemp necklaces with innocuous little tie-dye mushrooms on them, like, my mom would be like, oh, that's cute. And
that's
then she'd,
cute.
Like, buy it for me, so... So yeah. So like when you were going through all this stuff with your parents, like did you find, cause I know you have siblings, correct?
Yeah. I have two younger sisters.
Two younger sisters. Did you find like, was that your sort of, were you overprotective of them?
You know what? It didn't really kick in, hard with them. And I think it was because we were still competing for attention.
Okay.
Cause we were all living in the same house and, you know, limited resources that we thought. but you know, as I got older, I was like, shit, this is, I was not exactly the best big brother while this was going on because I was too focused on my own shit and this new group of friends that I was developing, which, you know, it was outside of the hell that was my house or so I thought. So I was more focused on them and less focused on my sisters. But, you know, as we got older, we've become closer.
Sure.
And
because your sister got married last year, right?
Yeah.
And you were in the wedding.
Yeah. She saw me speak at my grandfather's funeral and then asked me to speak at her wedding.
She's inspired. That's nice.
That's adorable.
Like, oh, he can actually be good at like formal occasions.
Well, yeah. I mean, prior to that, she saw a Sad Boy show. So.
Oh, that's Sad Boy Social Club. They're an amazing sketch group. I've actually had come out and perform at my show on Sunday nights at the Avenue Tap House. So, DJ, have you ever seen Sad Boys? Probably not.
I haven't.
I've only seen them
I
the one
actually.
Time when they came and performed at my show.
Last time you posted
shit.
About it, I would like was like, oh, I really need to go.
Yeah, they're really good. Like, I felt bad because I had them go halfway through my set. And then fucking Mary Santoro, who's literally the fucking funniest comic in all of Cleveland, goes up. And she's like, oh, good, I have to follow that. Like, she knew, like, how good it was. no, they're amazing. I love everybody in that sketch group.
No, she was just joshing. She knows that she can follow somebody that does well.
Yeah, no, but it was like probably one of the best shows I've ever had between their group. I had Mary. I had like, I don't know, I had some other really good people that night. This last week I had really good lineup. I had like someone was like dubbing it Murderer's Row. I think it was Jim. Because I was talking about how I had Josh Morrow and Brian Kenny and a bunch of people who are like, you know, just like known for being really good comics. And the crowd this week was like, arms folded, just like, fuck you. I don't care what you say. At one point I went up on the stage and I'm like, guys, I have been away from televisions for the last 2 hours. Was there a national tragedy that happened? Because you guys seem really fucking morose and somber right now. Like, I ended up getting, oh shit, what is his name? This is terrible that I'm blanking on his name. But I had a comic come out that everybody was like Riley and everybody was like jonesing to like see, Dan Alton. He came out and he got a decent response, but I was like, he messaged me the other day, he's like, thanks for having me out. And I was like, I am so sorry. Like, I don't know what happened with this crowd the other night, but they just refused to like react to anything anybody did. And it was like super.
I remember seeing Brian Kenny for the first time.
Did you see him do Reese's Pieces?
Is it Brian Kenny or Kenny?
Brian Kenny.
Kenny.
Yeah. I saw him, do the Reese's Pieces skit.
That's what he's gotten like
and
viral.
I was like burst laughing.
Yeah.
And I will randomly, like, I'll be on Facebook and some random person that like doesn't even live in Cleveland anymore, hasn't lived for years, will like post a video of Brian doing stand up, and I'm just like,
that's my favorite
shit.
Yeah. That's my favorite
shit. You see it out of nowhere.
Yeah. When it's people that don't know these people are sharing their shit.
Look at this guy.
And then I find myself wanting to comment and go, I know him.
I know. I want to be like, no, yeah, we're friends.
And
I'm just like, in real life.
No one fucking cares. Calm your tits, Hannah.
I have a tattoo on my ankle of a banana that says cottage on it. And that's for Ben Palmer, who is now an LA resident, but he has a Facebook page called Hope That Helps.
That's really good.
That's gotten pretty big.
So is it a reference to a joke that he does? I'm sorry.
This is in reference to a time where he got business cards printed. And they said
business cards.
A lot of business cards. And they said, what's up with Ben Palmer?
Okay.
And every time someone would pick up the card, they go, what's with all the bananas?
Is there bananas on it?
Yeah, there was just lines of bananas for no reason. And we were supposed to be having a writing meeting over at his house, and that is not what happened. We spent 3 hours roasting his business cards. And then the next day, they were found scattered out onto the streets. So when he moved, I got that done to remember that.
Oh, that's so great. Yeah, because like, I love Spider so much, and I know he's listening. I love you so much, Spider. I got him a job at the copy center at my law firm.
Okay.
And he made us SX1 business cards, and I love him so much, but I'm like, I don't know when I will hand these out. Like, I don't know in what context.
Where can I find you? Bang.
Right. I guess that's true. Like, I just feel like, when I'm talking to Uber drivers, like, they're like, no, I just want to look you up on, like, fucking Instagram right now. Or I want to look you up and, like...
Yeah, just have, like, a few on you,
I just need
you,
to throw
know?
Some in my purse. Because, like, right now they're sitting... Because the other thing is he makes us flyers sometimes, too, for, like, individual shows. But then it's, like, 675 flyers. I'm like, I'm not going to put most of
not
these
that
up. Because I don't want to be that guy who, like, puts them, like, everywhere. And then someone's like, get these fucking, like, glittering, sewer clogging shit. Like,
but, away. You know, those, like, random conversations that, like... you end up in that we both end up
Ubers,
in
every where, time
it, mostly in our Ubers where they're like what I'm gonna remember you and they start freaking out. Give them a card, just
share,
call it
answer
a
me this, is this like a common comic thing, like if you're in a rideshare and you tell them you're a comic, do they like lose their shit? Because I feel like 75% of the time they do.
I never tell them.
Oh, you don't tell them?
No,
well,
I don't.
They're always like, what are you doing tonight? And I'm always like, oh, I'm just going to go to some comedy. And they're like, you're a stand-up comic! And then they're like, am I going to see you on TV? Oh, my God. And they just like lose their shit. And I'm like,
yeah, I don't want to have that conversation.
That's right, smart.
The only time I've had that conversation, somebody was mad at me and like a little bit miffed with Jordan and I on the way to the the Now That's Class. Because we were bantering.
Oh, that's class.
Oh, they were mad, like, at your
they
banter?
Just,
or?
No, they were just like, yeah, this is fine. Jordan's like, yeah, we're doing a show tonight. And she's like, yeah, that's fine, whatever. And she didn't care. She was not impressed.
Yeah, I was going to say, we just usually get, because she's been a testament to, like, many times where, like, they'll just be like, oh, like, because the thing is, they'll ask us what we're doing, because the thing is, we'll Uber over here, because we know we're going to get, like, shithoused.
Right.
And... so we'll Uber over here, and they're like, oh, what are you ladies up to tonight? I'm like, oh, we're doing a pod. You're doing a podcast? Mm-hmm. Well, what's it about? And I'm like, well, I'm a comedian. You're a comedian? And then it's like, you temporarily feel like a celebrity, which yeah. I like, because like he was like shouting at us like the whole way.
Yeah, it was. He was like our hype man. Like we got out of the car and he's like, "All right, girls, you got this. You got this." And I was like, "Yeah, we do. Okay, we can do anything."
You should start taping these conversations.
I should.
Oh my god, reverse. We'll tell you after this. We talked about this. Like a couple episodes ago about like we thought we literally were going to be murdered.
Oh no.
Like in our our Uber driver, all signs were leading to our deaths.
What happens is I have them pick me up at my place and then we go to her place and then we come over here. So I have them right. do two stops and I'm texting her because, and then you guys have already heard the episode. Fuck you. You're going to have to listen to it again. I'm texting her because I'm on the shoreway going to her house and the guy is in a Jeep. And it's 18 degrees out. This is like 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. He has all the windows down in his Jeep. And I'm like, oh my God, Jeep, he has all the windows down. And then he's like, so we're going to the airport. And I'm like, no, we're going to West 95th. And he's like, oh, well, you said something about going to the airport. I'm like, no, I didn't go to the airport. And he's like, well, you're going to Brook Park, right? And I'm like, well, whatever West 135th or whatever the fuck that is. He's like, yeah, let's go to the airport. I'm like, okay. He's like, yeah, I don't really know where that is. So I just put in secrets as the address. And
Jesus
I was like,
Christ.
I don't. And so I don't say anything because I don't know what that is.
I was waiting for that to sink in.
I didn't know what that was. And I was like, So I didn't say anything. All of a sudden, so this is literally like the classic comedian's moment because I don't respond. And he's like, you know, secrets. Secrets? The gentleman's club? And I was like, oh, no, we're not going there. And he was just like, oh, all right. So I'm like texting him like, I don't know what's happening.
He's like, that's what I do. I just enter locations that I know are around the address that you need to get to.
Like, I don't know what's happening. His windows are all down. It's 18 degrees. He wants to go
what
to a gentleman's
club. What are you, Pocahontas? Just follow the fucking GPS.
Like, get out of the Uber. Just get out right now. We'll call a different one. I'm like, no, it's fine. So we get to her place. And then it just becomes like, it just devolves.
I mean, she was, and I was like, get out of the car. We're taking another Uber. By the time I get in, I'm like a very observant person. So I'm literally, my eyes are just like, just taking fucking like mental picture after picture.
And I am oblivious.
She's talking to me and I'm like, as I'm looking around going, why does he have so many things shoved into the heating vents? We're going to die.
So he's driving and like, he's like, driving and he's looking at like he doesn't even have the mount.
Oh,
like he's
no.
looking at his
it's
GPS.
Like a first generation of some type of like BlackBerry or something. It's cracked and he's just like
and like I got into his car and I knew she was coming. His car is filled with Dr. Pepper boxes, like just filled in the backseat, and I'm throwing them all into like the trunk space. And so we finally like pick her up and he's just like, am I supposed to turn left here? And like, apparently he's not reading the GPS because he's paying no attention.
I felt like Dane Cook. It's like, follow the road you're on to
me. So finally, like at one point he rolls the windows. Like he rolled the windows up, I think. Oh, and he had a seatbelt off the whole time. So it was just like, ding, ding,
oh, that's the worst.
Which was like our actual red flag to get the fuck out of the car.
But like, so he rolled the windows up, I think, before we picked you up.
Yeah, we're driving along like, and we're like, oh, you should have turned there. Okay, that's whatever.
We'll just go into the right.
And then all of a sudden it's like becomes this thing where I'm just like looking at every single item in the car like I will remember all of this. And like every time he would like I would look up, he would be looking at me in the rear view mirror.
No.
And I was like, oh, do not remember this face. You will never see my face again. But I'm gonna remember yours.
The new car tags like in his glove box.
Yeah, the tags. I was like, this like my spidey senses are tingling right now. And then because he doesn't have the heat on at all, so I'm like, oh God, he's prepping our meat. He's prepping our bodies. Oh, we're going to be so tender. And then all of a sudden, he can't see out of his window.
No one can see out the windows. Like, he has a
moon
roof.
It's fogged up like we've been
Everything
making out, like
fogged.
It's Titanic or something.
You can't see. And so then all of a sudden, all the windows come down because he can't see out the fucking windows to know if he can cross the street or not.
As soon as his window came down and that wind
and
started hitting me.
Oh, that's why the windows were down.
I was
down.
Going like this because I couldn't hold in my laughter.
18 degrees.
I was like, this is how I'm going to die? Really?
I don't even know, man. And at one point I was like, did I get in the wrong Uber? Because he really wants to like, go to the airport and take us to secrets.
It's as if he picked you up and was like, are you?
Yeah.
Are and you were like, yeah.
And because the thing is, when he went to pick me up, I was like chasing, because he like drove past my place. And I'm chasing him with my phone like, hey, wait, you're the Jeep with the license plate that I'm supposed to get in.
He didn't know how to drive. He had he didn't know what lanes were. I felt like I was living in Mexico again. Yeah, I was like.
And I
toot
felt
toot.
Because we run in and Pete's just sitting on the couch, like eating dinner. We come running and we're like, oh my God, Pete, we almost died.
You almost got human traffic.
I know, that's what I said. She literally said, she was like, that's why you want to take us to the airport so bad, so we can human traffic.
I was like, why else does he want to get to the airport so badly?
Because there's somebody in a hotel room that has somewhere to take you.
Exactly. Ohio has a lot of highway systems. That's why we have so much sex trafficking.
Yes.
Easy access.
Do we really have it bad here? I don't know anything about it. Okay. Is it
really?
Bad?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's,
oh, my gosh.
I'm sorry. I'm like oblivious.
Especially in Toledo.
Toledo,
because
Ohio is like, what number is it in the country?
Like three or something like that.
It's two or three.
Well, yeah, because you've got the highway going up to Michigan. You've got the highway going to Chicago. Okay. And you've got the highway going down.
And so it's like the intersection for all like the major highways. Yeah. Well, that's the thing I knew about Dayton, because 75 were through there. That's why, like, the opioids and, like, heroin was, like, a huge thing in Dayton.
Yeah, it's just, like, the easy access of highways and, like, getting in, getting out real quick.
Yep.
It's sketch.
So when was the first time that you had, like, the self-realization, like, oh, I'm being really overprotective of people?
Probably when I started taking the cell phone with me, because this was been in
2002, like...
No, before that. Before that, like, 96, 97.
Shit, they had cell phones back then?
They did, if you were wealthy enough.
I lived in the sticks, so yeah, that's why I didn't know.
Yeah, they were still called car phones. This is how long ago it was. Mm-hmm. So I would take the car phone out with me because, in case I was needed, I had to rush off to the rescue. Because I found myself often in situations where... it would need my attention. Whether or not it actually needed my attention
was... You just felt it did.
Yeah, it did. You know, occasionally it did. Like, I'd get a phone call at work going, please come pick me up. I'm hiding in the Coventry parking garage. My mother's gone insane. A good friend of mine that I'm still friends with this day. So I had to go pick her up and then put her, like, in my restaurant while, like, the cops were, like, looking for her.
Oh, my God.
And that was a little nuts, but I eventually, like, worked it out to where she didn't have to go home. She could stay with me.
Okay.
The worst was, you know, one of them's dead, so I can just say it.
Yeah, why not? Of all the people to name names on this podcast, I would expect you to be like the Neil Armstrong of dropping names on
this podcast. Yeah. Well, again, I'm overprotective. I don't want to like.
No, I get that. But if they're dead, there's really nothing you can do.
Yeah. So there was a girl I knew named Renee, and she had a serious Munchausen's problem, like to the point where it eventually killed her. Pretty much.
Wow.
But she would call me all the time and ask me to take her to the hospital because
that's an attention thing or
Munchausen is like it's like fabricating
illnesses.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
And it got to the point where like she eventually like because she would not leave her shit alone.
Okay.
Like something was always wrong, and you know she'd constantly have to go to the hospital. Eventually, she had like. Most of her intestines removed and like,
is it like a formal diagnosis of hypochondria sort of or
kind of except okay. It's much worse than hypochondria because it's not like I'm sick I don't want to go anywhere to I'm sick I need to go to the hospital and get treated even though there's nothing wrong and that it happened all the time so you know she would call me
and you didn't really question it just because you were like I want to.
Yeah, I want to, like, it's somebody asking for my help instead of, you know, there's all this horrible shit going on that there's nothing I can do about. It's like, this is something I can actually do stuff about. So teenage drama was, like, exactly my shit.
Yeah.
And it's continued on to this day if you ask certain people.
Yeah. That you just step in when you're asked to, or?
I step in when I'm asked to. I'm worried about other people's shit all the time. It's just, you know, if I feel like that there's some control that I can have over the situation, I want to help. I want to contribute because I don't want to watch you suffer.
Sure.
And so it's just remain like that.
Do you find that that's also, though, and I'm sure this is probably the case, but I wanted to sort of confirm. Do you find, though, like, you're often stepping into situations where people don't want your assistance or you're being overprotective?
Yes. Okay. You know, it's like they didn't ask for my opinion. It's just like they wanted to vent.
Yeah.
And then, but that's something that I've kind of grown more cognizant of.
Okay.
That's like, all right, They don't want your opinion. They just want to listen, and sure. you're helping by listening. So shut sure. up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
you don't want to need. You don't need to do. You don't. You need action. You just need yeah. to listen.
It's not like they're. You know, it's best example is somebody was like, "I'm not feeling well," and I was like, "Do you want information on, you know, where to go get help?" And then I was just like, "This is where you go get help with step by step instructions."
Yeah.
And it was not needed. They just wanted to talk.
Okay.
But, you know, it's I do shit like that all the time.
Do you find that, so first off, from the perspective of overprotectiveness, do you have to be a certain level of close with people, or do you just kind of immediately notice that you're protective of people that you relate to, or?
It varies. I'm more patient, so I think I get closer to people faster.
Okay.
And also because it seems like, you know, I'll meet somebody and then I know their life story immediately.
Just because they're willing to open up to you, or you kind yeah. of are aware? Okay.
No, it's not like, aha, I see that haircut.
Because some people are like, I know what you're about just by like a few individual details.
No, no. I mean, I grew up a Coventry kid. Like there's a lot of layers to people
okay.
that you have to unpack and unpeel. But, okay. So I'm not. I don't make those assumptions until a few months down the line.
When did you realize you're the kind of person that people like want to open up to?
It really occurred to me when I was down in Columbus doing a roast battle, just standing there minding my own business. And this guy and this girl come up to me and is like, I like your hat. Call your crew, not the cops. I wish other people around here would know that. See these white boys. And they tell me this long, convoluted story about how he was beat up by a gang of white guys
okay.
For dating a white girl and all the drama that ensued because of that. This is like a 7-minute story that I didn't ask for. And I just turned to pause. They were walking around like, what's wrong with me?
So do you know, like, have you ever figured out, like, what it is about you that makes people
I
want?
Don't.
You
I
don't have,
no
have a
idea.
Clue? Because, I mean,
I have the exact same issue.
That is a great point.
Like,
people want to open
people
to you all the time.
Come up to me and, like, just start talking to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'll be at anywhere. It's like at the bus stop, in line somewhere.
Yeah.
And I'm always like, what am I putting off that mm-hmm. like makes people feel so comfortable?
The only thing I have figured out is that I think it's because I'm a decent active listener and people aren't used to that. So the second that you make eye contact when someone is talking to you, it's like all of a sudden like...
It has to be some energy though. Because like even if people don't know me,
mm-hmm.
like they don't know I'm a good listener, which I am, they'll come right up and just...
So I'm just going to put this out here right now because I'm drunk and I don't give a shit. Both of you do not have resting bitch face. Like you both have very like kind faces. I have like a hard bitch face.
I have
like,
been told
people
that.
People do not... Like I'm not approachable. I've been told that many times. Furthermore... I can't explain what it is, but I feel like what you're describing is exactly what I feel about Jeremy Shearer. Like the first time I ever met him, I was like, I like this guy. I'm going to like go to him. Like he's like my comedy dad, big brother. Like I'm going to go to him for all my shit. Like, and I can't explain why that is. Like, I really don't know why.
I don't know. I guess I put out that.
I guess you do. Because like I said, I've always felt like, and then like, it was funny because Jordan was talking. He's like, I don't know. I just want to sponsor our podcast. I think it's because she loves Jeremy. And I was like, yeah, pretty much. Like, cause I don't, and I don't know why. Like there's not a tangible reason.
I'm
not saying
why.
You're not lovable, but I'm just saying like,
I'm not lovable.
And that's the thing. Most people will tell you he's not a lovable person, but there's something ultimately about him that I just like trust and I can't explain why. And I wish like, you knew, so you could tell me why the fuck this happens, like, because that's...
Yeah, I honestly don't know. I know that I parent too much. That's what my shrink keeps telling me.
Yeah.
So that's, I guess I just give off a dad vibe.
A dad vibe, yeah.
You have, like, a calming energy.
Yeah. Because, like, I remember the first time I met you was at Saxenheim.
Yep.
I think
actually, I met you before that.
You saw me improv with mm-hmm. TM.
Yeah.
I don't know. Did I meet you that night or did you see me?
I think I just saw you because I was like, I'm at a comedy class graduation. Nobody must see me here.
Well, it's funny because then I saw him at Saxenheim, like, I don't know, it was a couple weeks later. And you're like,
I thought you were a cop.
Undercover
cop. No one
has
ever told me that before.
I was like,
just
it was
like
you
the least copliest cop ever.
You were, no, it was you and Aaron McHugh.
Yes.
And I was like,
he remembers Aaron
definitely
McHugh.
Not a cop no. present then.
Well, okay. So have you been to Saxenheim before?
I haven't.
You should
been
go.
There actually.
Okay. Jess and Aaron do not really fit the clientele of Thursday night Saxenheim. So
true.
I was, and they wanted to go up, and I'm like, they're cops. And then, and then I asked the name, and I was like, oh, that's where I know you from.
And
I
was like, all right. And what was the greatest part is you were like, you were one of the only funny people that went up that night.
Yeah.
And then
that's
I was
a funny cop.
He was like permanently endeared to me. I was like, no one has said anything that like substantial, like, because people laughed that night, but like no one had given me positive feedback, and I was like, oh, maybe I just had a good night. And the other thing is too, like, when I go do, like, every time I go do Saxenheim, it's literally like you and shit, who else comes to those things?
Wellington,
sometimes Calhoun, Tabitha, and those are the only motherfuckers that laugh at anything that I ever say, but they're always fucking laughing. And then there's just regulars in there that are just like with their like fucking leader sign of beer, like, why is this happening?
Yeah.
So like that's the thing. Like they were the first ones that ever made me feel like not an outsider, but like at home. And you know, it was only like 2 weeks in. But that's the thing. Like, ever since you guys, I've never felt like people always talk about like the Cleveland comedy scene is blah blah blah. And I'm like, I feel like you guys are, like, the toughest customers, and if I'm accepted by you guys, like, anybody can be accepted in the Cleveland comedy community. I don't know. Maybe that's just a bad impression on my part.
I don't know. I don't think that – I think that people's impressions of the Cleveland comedy scene are what they make of it.
Exactly. I agree.
And because there is – look, you don't have to do anything. If you want a lot of stage time, you can get a lot of stage time. Because there's show up, go ups, email to get on shows.
Yep.
You're not necessarily going to make friends with everybody you meet because that's not how the world works.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, basically the people that are in charge tend to book people they know.
Yeah.
Because if you're going to put trust in somebody to not fuck up their show, who are they going to go to? Are they going to go to someone that they're familiar with their work, or are they going to give a shot to somebody?
Well, and to your point, like, I will book people I don't know from Adam, but if there's someone I don't know from Adam, I'm like, you have to send me a video of your set so that I know it's not just incoherent rambling, so that I know it's not just straight up like I'm trying to be provocative and edgelordy, like that there's something more to it. And the thing is, usually by 90 seconds into any video I get, I'm like, yeah, no, you're fine. Like,
yeah.
You're totally fine. But I need that reassurance before I put you up, because my face, my name, everything is on that show.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think for me, I love to give everyone that opportunity, but you know, some people are not quite as liberal with their booking policies.
No, they aren't. And I understand it. I mean, to my end, I book shows for a long time, and there are people that still have, like, I gave them their first paycheck, and, well, it wasn't a check. It was a $5 bill, but it's taped to their fucking fridge.
Did you sign it?
I did not sign it. They'll come up to me like 10 years later and like, yeah, I still have that $5 you gave
me. Draw
a
dick on Lincoln's face.
That's awesome.
This happened to me last night. But, I mean, it's I was in more of a position where I could do that because, you know, these are the spots that I have for people that, you know, I want to get a look at to see if I can give them longer sets.
Yeah.
And this is the places that I do where it's like anybody can show up and do because it's an open mic. And then these are the, like, I need killers only.
Yeah.
So I had it arranged like that. But I also, I was out all the time, so I saw everybody.
Yeah.
And, like, it's not like that anymore. Like, I've had to take a step back from going to all these shows because I want to murder too many people.
Well, that's another thing I appreciate about you is I feel like you and me and maybe like Bill Squire and a couple other people remember fucking people after we meet them and we've seen them and we know what they're about. Because there's so many other people that I had to meet 48 times before I like remembered who I was, or remembered what my comedy style was, and like even thought about like including me in like their showcases and stuff. So, and I don't know what it is about us that's specifically that way.
I don't know, but I know why that is. It's because there's so many people that wash out.
Yeah.
I mean, you saw that list that Josh Morrow put up from years ago.
Yeah, and you saw my comment on that, how like about half the people were still doing it. And it was from 5 years ago, which I thought was really impressive. Was it an actual American flag? Were you there for that? He got an actual American flag, and he used to host LVT, Josh Morrow.
Okay.
And so to sign up, you signed your name on the stripes of the American flag. Mm-hmm. And I mm-hmm. was like, but I was looking at it because it was from 5 years ago. And there were people, like, I would say half of the colonies were still people that are still doing comedy, still people I know from 5 years ago. And I was, like, really happy about that. I was like, fuck, 5 years ago, like, these people are still fucking, like, doing this shit.
Yeah.
So.
And there are a lot of people on that list that I miss. Because, and that's part of the reason why people don't get attached to new people. It's like, you get invested in this person.
And you get excited. You get
excited to see them. You get excited to see.
I've had that once so far.
Yeah. And then they disappear.
Especially so, I think we were talking about this when you came in with Joey, like the idea of like, I don't want to be like the pigeonhole, like women comics, but like anyone can see if you have eyes from space that there are like literally six women comics in the Cleveland comedy scene. And that's probably representative. There might be more. There might be 10.
There are a lot.
There are a lot.
I mean, yeah.
I mean, me, Tabitha, Amber, Mary, Ginger, Mary.
Ginger.
Jasmine. Jasmine. Ulysse. Who the fuck else?
Do we say Mary?
Yes, we said Mary.
Wanda.
Wanda. Liz Blanc.
Liz Blanc.
We said Tabitha already.
Mm-hmm.
Who else?
Come on. You just know. Elizabeth Seaman.
Elizabeth Seaman. Anya Horning. Mm-hmm. Fuck.
Anybody that I miss is going to get mad at me. 11. So you got to keep going.
I know there's other women. It's just that I've been drinking for like 3 hours. Shit.
Is Aaron one?
Kate Hogan. Mm-hmm. Aaron quit stand-up and she does improv now. Sam D, I think, quit and she mostly does improv now.
She does, which she deserves to be quit. Jesse.
Jesse Ricker. Mm-hmm. Fuck. Why can't I think of more people? Donna Gad, which again, she's only been doing it for like a couple months, so you don't really know. Yeah. Like, by the time even this airs, you don't really know like if that's going to be a long-term thing.
Joanna Butler.
I don't know her.
She's in Akron.
Okay.
Let's see, who else in Akron?
Oh, Chris Kanzi,
Cindy Rice.
Oh,
Cindy Rice.
How the fuck did I forget? I'm so sorry, Cindy. You can feel free to just spit in my mouth the next time you see me. Oh.
Sharon Vandevort. She's a Youngstown person. Let's see, Lemon Love.
I haven't met her.
Lemon Love, I met long time ago.
Who's another shit? I feel like a lot of them have added me on Facebook.
Carly Robe.
I don't know.
Yeah, there's a ton of women.
Oh, Bridget Callahan.
Bridget Callahan. Is she still in town?
She just moved back to North Carolina, I think.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I think she just went back.
I only saw her once while she was in town.
I saw her at 51st Jokes and she was really fucking good.
She is. I've been following her writing for a long time because, you know, I was friends with her sister.
Is Carrie her sister?
Yeah.
Okay.
And but then she started doing stand-up when she moved. Okay. She moved out of Cleveland, started doing stand-up, and then came back here. And every time she's come back, I've missed her.
So there's a lot, but the thing is, you and I can sit here and still like name them, where I feel like if we try to do dude comics, we'd be here for the next 6 hours.
There's definitely more dudes than there are women.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of women.
No, I don't disagree. And I think the thing that I always tell people personally about the Cleveland comedy scene is that I feel like it's almost kind of like an anomaly when you think about like the per capita size of Cleveland compared to like Pittsburgh, Detroit, Indianapolis, Columbus, Cincinnati. Like our comedy scene, and I could just be biased, but I think it is far more active than a lot of those cities.
For the population that we have, yes, it's more active. You can get on a show or see a show every night of the week.
Yep.
There are more active comedians.
Yep.
There are more people that are producing shows. It is not the same four people or six people that are producing all the shows in Cleveland.
Yep.
There's four different fucking sketch groups, which is unheard of.
Yeah, right?
There's an active improv community.
Very active improv.
There's an active storytelling community. You know, there's like fucking six different storytelling shows, and my friend Angel just started another one down in Akron. So, okay. I mean, it's...
Is she a lousy weather angel?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
that
she does a...
really terrible, but that's just... what
yeah, she does a... She's like name. A fourth mic slash producer on the main show.
Okay.
But she just started a monthly storytelling show in Barberton to get those people involved. There's... And that's the thing. You can pretty much... They haven't really figured out that people will get new and like, well, I want to do a show, and they will go and get a show together, and they haven't like given up on the idea of, you know, doing their own thing yet. Yeah. And there's space for that here. So yeah. it's a great city, and it's part of the reason I didn't leave.
Right. Cause that's it. Like there's a lot of opportunity. And I think there's a receptive audience. That's the thing. What's been funny to me is that, you know, coming from a completely non-comic background and doing this the last almost 2 years, so many of my friends who are still like people that I made friends with prior to being a comedian, mm-hmm. I'm like, holy shit, like there's a local comedy scene. And so it's like introducing mm-hmm. so many people to the fact that there is such a robust and active comedy scene that's out there.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the friends that I made before comedy were there in the first few years I was mm-hmm. doing it. Mm-hmm. So it's like I've like dragged them out all the time already. And they're no, it's nice that you're still doing it, but we've seen you a million times.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, but it's new stuff. And they're like, you don't care.
I know. And that was me last night. Like I was on Brothers I did Step Brothers Lounge last night, and I was like, I didn't promote it because I just feel like at some point it becomes white noise because people mm-hmm. are just like, they see, no, you're fucking doing something every goddamn night. Like, we can't keep up with all the shit you're doing.
Yeah, I don't promote open mic appearances. I promote showcases that I know are going to be good and sad boys, and that's pretty much it.
Right. And that was another thing, too. Like, I've been getting a lot of, like, out-of-town comics that have been asking to be booked on Avenue Tap House Showcase. And they're like, here's my headshot. Here's my bio. And I was like, I don't want to have the heart to tell them. Like, we don't really do that. Like, we just, like, a day before, I'm like, hey, these people. And I tag them on Facebook. And I know at some point it should probably become better. But it's like, I just... There's this whole concept of like, you know, investing as much into it as you're going to end up getting out of it. And ultimately, if 12 people are going to show up and most of them are comics, like I'm not going to
Tell them, you just be honest with them. Like, this is a locals showcase. I mean, we'd love to have you, but if you're looking to make $50 or if you're looking to take donations, you're not going to have a good time. But if you're just looking to get like a night on stage.
Well, the thing is like, Spider and I don't get paid to do the showcase and we don't take admission. So like anything that like we would pay comics would be coming directly like out of our pockets. Mm-hmm. And I don't mind doing that once in a blue moon, but I would be like literally living in a box if I like paid every comic that I had to come on my showcase. Even if it was like $5.
That was a problem that I had when I was doing Sad Boys. More often than we're doing it now. Like now we're like bi-monthly instead of like doing a new show every month, which was like very, very ambitious, but I think we pulled it off. But I was paying people that were coming to do our show out of pocket.
Okay. Like other comics to like, mm-hmm. okay.
Yeah. To do the 15-minute set, like for intermission, like I was paying them out of pocket. And at the time I had a really good job, so it was fine. But, you know, as time went on, it's like, oh, shit, I got to pay them out of tickets because I don't have any fucking money anymore. So it became, shit, I got to recoup my investment instead of, shit, I got to make sure everybody's paid.
Right.
So
because that's it. Like you have like I think the sort of evolution of a lot of the comedy projects that I've taken on anyway is like you have this passion project and you're like, fuck, I'm going to pay like $500 to promote this shit mm-hmm. and get it going and produce. Mm-hmm. But then at some point, like you still want it to be your passion project, but like. Either like you're going to keep supporting it solely financially through yourself or you're going to want other people to help contribute at some point.
Yeah. And that's where I found myself a lot of the time, especially with recent projects. But, you know, for the most part, they've been funding themselves.
Good.
It's working out.
I'm hoping we get to the level here on default setting that we can get a Patreon going.
Yeah.
Right now there's a Patreon going for Let the Hate Flow Through You, which is a host. Jeremy is a host. I don't know why I didn't mention that earlier. Probably because I'm drunk. Jeremy is a host of Let the Hate Flow Through You, which is on the Lousy Weather Media Network. And his co-host, Jordan Patrick, who is the head of the Above Below Entertainment Network, which is who we are a part of. So I want to get back into the overprotectiveness thing though. Like you mentioned, you started noticing it as your mom got sick and you said it wasn't really an element so much for your little sisters.
Right.
And I apologize. You may have said this already, but like, do you remember like what era thereabouts it started really directly like affecting you? Or?
It really was when my dad moved out.
Okay.
And
that became like. Was it specifically to females or was it everybody?
No, it was everybody.
Okay.
It was everybody. You know, I'm not some weirdo white knight guy.
Okay. Thank I giggle maniacally because I can think of like at least three people off the top of my head.
Yeah.
Weirdo night guys.
But no one needs one of those. Yeah. So.
No. No, that's not it. I just I don't want to see people suffer, and that's what motivates me. I'm not trying to fuck anybody.
Yeah. No, and that's the thing too. I think that's another piece. So we were trying to hit the nail on the head with why like people gravitate towards you, and that was the thing. I never felt like it was like he's trying to get in my pants. Like, no, he's legitimately concerned for my well-being, sort mm-hmm. of like peace. So does that something you find yourself like? You just find yourself very easily falling into with like wanting to protect certain people or everyone?
No, it's everybody. I will get cross and then sometimes I'm not too concerned about their safety anymore.
Yeah. But, like, how do you mean?
I get very, very angry
with the person or the person that's trying to take advantage. Like,
no, I get angry at people like period.
Okay.
You know, I fly off the handle a bit and, you know, somebody invented this stupid device that allows me to yell at people over a great distance. And
that would be the mobile device.
Yeah. And that was a mistake. So
Have you found since the mobile, like social media sort of thing, like has that exacerbated the overprotectiveness?
Oh my God. Yes. 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 I never should have discovered sad Twitter. Okay.
Oh my God, sad Twitter. Oh, no. Oh my God.
It's like, oh, I wish, wait a minute. Now I get it. It's actually helped.
Good.
Because it's like, oh, yeah, no, this is just how we're dealing with this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Perfect. I can get behind this. I don't have to go, are you okay, every 5 minutes.
Sure. That's just like a venting sort of like format. Do you find that it's probably, I don't know, like this is the thing I struggle with. Is it healthier to deal with things from like a distance and a virtual perspective versus like face to face? You know what I mean? Like, because when it's face to face, it's real. Mm-hmm. But like on virtual, like social media, it can still be construed as like, this is imaginary. And this is like,
I don't know. I've kind of pulled back from being as active on social media as I was. And I try to produce more content than I take in. So that I'm not always irritated with people.
Yep.
I unfollow people at the drop of a hat.
I mute a lot. So that there's no like, because mine's literally like a diplomacy thing. Like the second this motherfucker figures out that I unfollowed him, he's going to shit a brick. So I'm just going to mute him so I don't have to see him anymore. And then there's
That's a Twitter thing.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, Twitter,
I should do that. I just unfollow them on Facebook.
So that's what I do too. Is I stay friends with them, but I unfollow them on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's a handy tool.
I have like 600 friends on Facebook, and I think I actively follow like 64 of them. Yeah. Like everybody else is muted
for sure. I've had to block a couple, but mostly it's just unfollow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh yeah, I've blocked a lot of people. I actually, it's a premium on the Patreon account, you can find out who I've blocked. The list has grown.
It just keeps growing.
It does, because I'm always angry at somebody.
So what's like a, you know, like a big reason, like a trigger for you to want to block someone on social media?
A trigger for me blocking somebody is usually a personal problem that I have with them that, you know, I... Just seeing that they're alive and okay makes me angry.
Okay, so just like seeing your enemy thrive. Okay.
Yes, I'm like, no. There are people that I want to keep an eye on to make sure that I'm not in the same place as them. And then there are people that I don't fucking care.
Like keep your enemies close.
Yeah, it's less of keep your enemies close. It's just like, okay, I know this person is going to be at this event that I'm being paid for. And I'm going to have to be nice to them. So it's nice to have preparation ahead of time.
Gotcha. That makes sense.
And that's what happened to me last night. I was ready. I went in and I was nice. And then I went home and I was like, I deserve hazard pay.
That is a good way to like prep yourself.
Yeah. So that I know it's like, I'm going to have to deal with your fucking stupid ass. And now I tend to just block those people anyway. Because it's like, at this point in my career, I think I'm in a point where I don't have to work with anybody I don't want to. But
that's good.
It's which is coming handy, but you know, there's still going to be places that I know that planes intersect, so to speak, and there's nothing I can do about it. Like, if I want to do this, I mean, I have to deal with
this person.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing that I've noticed is even with all the like drama and bullshit that might go on with like specifically you interacting with other people or whatever it might be, that's the thing I really struggle with when people start shitting all over the comedy scene is that like people can still act like adults. Like people can still be professional. Mm-hmm. Like, and I know there's exceptions. Like I know there's probably been historical like where someone just acted like a fucking lunatic. But like for the most part, I've seen people who like publicly for the most part don't like each other or go so far as to say maybe even hate each other that can still be in the same room, can still introduce each other onto stage, can still shake hands, can still do all those things.
I'm not that guy.
No?
No. If I hate you, I want nothing to do with
really?
You.
So you won't even come to the show? Setting.
No.
Is there a limited list of those people? That
yes.
Are? Okay. Because I was going to say, you seem like you get along still, though, with most people.
I get along still with most people, but there are people that I'm so angry at that I don't want anything to do with them in a professional setting.
Is it an effect that happened to you directly, or is it a result, or both, whereas it was something they did to you directly or something they did to someone that you feel...
Mostly column B, but okay. Some of column A.
Okay.
There's not a lot you can do to me.
Okay.
You know, I am a fat, ugly bastard. Like, you can insult me all you want. Like,
that's
I've heard
the thing.
It.
People say shit, and it's like, how do you not think that he doesn't already? Like, my favorite thing at the roast battle a couple weeks ago, someone said something about his teeth, and he was like, don't. And I don't know why, but my mom used to say, like, that kind of shit, like, warning shit all the time, and it would send a chill through my body. It was so much more chilling when he said it. He was like, just don't. Don't do that. But furthermore, why those people think, like, you haven't ever heard that before.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's because that's why I go at the end. One, so that I can write more jokes, because, you know, I like writing 60 jokes a month. That's kind of my shit.
Mm-hmm.
And two, because... I've been roasted so many. I've been in. It's after next month. It's going to be 25 roasts.
Wow.
There's nothing
that hasn't been said.
Yeah. Like, what are you going to do at this point?
Yeah.
And
it kind of takes. It just takes the complete air out of it when it's already.
Yeah, and even when people will bring me up during their battles, it's like it doesn't. It doesn't have any effect.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, me battling somebody is just they've got to be really good. And then I'll take...
Between Jeremy and Tabitha, I don't know of anyone. Like, Logan's a good contender, especially Logan Rashaw is a really good contender against Tabitha.
Logan is, man, there have been people that have really surprised me with how good they are at this, and Logan's is definitely
amazing.
One of those good...
Because I would not have expected that.
Yeah, because the first time I saw him, I think, was against Cody Cooper, and he smoked him.
Like, he smoked Cody?
Yeah.
No shit. Because Cody's good.
Him. Cody's yeah, Cody good. Is good. Cody yeah. beat Bill.
Cody, my favorite thing is, I don't know why, because I think it's always so evenly matched when Cody goes against Chris Wronowski or when Sam used to go against Chris Wronowski. Like, it was funny. Like, I would just, my mouth would hurt from laughing mm-hmm. after the end because they were just, and you didn't know who to applaud for because they were so, they were both so fucking
yeah,
good.
The Cody-Chris battle was amazing.
Oh, it was so good.
This month.
And like, I agree with, so Ryan DePerna and Chris Paul are, like, the host slash, like, they'll offer, like, they're not judges, but they'll offer, like, commentary in between each person's, like, roast battle joke.
Gotcha.
And, like, the thing was, like, Cody, I felt like Cody and Chris are very evenly matched.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what happened, but the momentum got lost. So when people were, like, because they vote by, like, applause as far yeah. as, like, who was the favorite. Cody got, like, a standing O. And Chris was just as fucking funny, but everyone was like, meh, Chris. Yeah. And Ryan was like, you guys are not giving enough credit to Chris right now because that was fucking hysterical.
Yeah, that has happened a few times. We're making some adjustments.
Yeah, to, like, the momentum of how
that's to judged. How it's judged.
Oh, so no longer will it be an audience response? Or
it's probably going to be me judging and... Andy judging and one other person.
Andy Barr is a musical comedian. He goes up with like a guitar and he just goes
oh,
up and does
I've
like parody songs and shit.
He'll also do improvised songs, which
does
is
he?
Pretty great.
He's
nice.
Great. But yeah, I mean, like, I don't think I've ever seen Jeremy or Tabitha like anything better. Like, even in a professional setting, as far as like roast level shit, because I've watched a million of those Comedy Central roast and is like, man, this person's a slut. Man, this person has AIDS. Man, and like, that's all well and good.
I remember dying laughing when I, because I was at that one roast that
yeah,
you ran.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty incredible. Yeah. Like, I was dying laughing.
And, I mean, the other thing is, too, like, there's, I think there's something to be said for the ability to make it funny to everyone who doesn't know that person.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's the hardest part. You know, it's got, it can't be inside baseball unless it's all comics there.
Right,
right.
And
you guys definitely succeeded, the one I went to.
Awesome. I'm glad
I
we
was
did.
Able to, appealing like, to a broad, you know, I was able to follow as someone who had, like, especially at that time. I had maybe been to like a couple of your. Yeah.
Well, because I was like 6 months into it. You were so new. Point, yeah.
I didn't know
you
any of
you showed up with Jess. Okay. That was still when you had
and
blue
Adam
hair.
And Adam was there. Yes. And Chris was working the door that night. So, yeah.
I remember now.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because I feel like Tabitha won, but like I think the final was she was either up against Ulysse or she was up against Kristen. Because
she was
all
up
women
against Kristen
at the end. And I was like, fuck, man, all these women are fucking great.
Kristen is another one that is Kristen's amazing good, at roasting.
Yeah, she's really good.
I got to roast her at her wedding in front of her family.
That's so great.
And her father shook my hand afterwards.
Was it like you?
Well done.
Was it the same level of like going hard as you would at a normal roast battle?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I brought up like exes and shit.
That's
did,
awesome.
Like, did you, was like, was everyone pretty much on board with it or like?
People were a little like when I told her how she looked in her dress. They were kind of like, what? It was like, this is what guy? She asked for. I was.
My favorite thing Jeremy says is he likes to talk about how, like, when comedians date or marry each other, they're in a gay relationship.
They are.
And so, like, because Adam technically did stand up for, like, a month, I'm in, like, a gay relationship.
Yep.
So, and then, like, didn't you say, like, so her husband did stand up, too, Kristen's husband?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Elton,
I did not know that.
I met Elton at the Corner Pub.
Okay.
Before, like, they went on a sneak date at Saxonheim. That was their first date, was at Saxonheim on open mic night. Kristen showed up and she looked very nice, like very, very nice. Like she's wearing like a really pretty dress. And I was like, this is not normal, Kristen. And then Elton shows up, who I hadn't seen in months since Corner Pub. And I shake his hand and he sits with Kristen. I'm like, you son of a bitch.
And you old dog.
And now they're married. So
you dirty dog.
So, I mean, do you still feel like overprotectiveness is a big piece of you?
Yeah, I'm trying to get over it because I'm trying to not get angry on other people's behalf because that's a big problem for me.
Okay.
That's why I'm on all the medications that I'm on.
So you truly think it's more about that empathy that you have for like trying to...
I just want to stop people from suffering.
Yeah.
And I want to help as much as I can. And sometimes I'm overextending. I'm overstepping and I'm not necessarily, is the motivation really that I want them to stop suffering or is the motivation that I need to have control over this situation so that I know everything's going to be okay.
Right.
And that's where it's like, it's more of that. Okay. So I need to knock it off.
Okay. So how do you think you've, like, when did you make this resolution that you're going to try a little bit harder to?
Pretty much when I went back into therapy, it was like, all right. Like
how long ago
I need
was
to.
That?
July is when I finally was able to see somebody.
Okay.
So.
And how do you think you're doing with it?
I mean, there's still a lot of weeks where it's like, oh, this shit's going on, and I need to talk to somebody about it because everybody's sick of my bullshit.
Sure.
And you know, there are definitely people that I know that are like, there's like, I've dumped all the fucking bullshit that I've been dealing with on them. And they're like, you just need to stop caring about people and smoke this bowl and let's watch cartoons.
So I relate to that so hard because, and I've talked about this a couple times on the episode, like, so I was one of those people who kind of made like my best friends and my significant others and everyone sort of like the epicenter of my universe.
Mm-hmm.
And I would, every problem that was their problem, like I took on as my own personal problem. And then I started to realize, and it sounds really jaded, but like ultimately there were just a huge percentage of those same people who did not, if I had something serious going on in my life, they didn't take that on the same way that I did.
Mm-hmm.
And when
so you couldn't like balance.
Well, and it felt, any of it almost kind of felt like, for lack of a better term, and it's going to be racist and I don't give a fuck, but I felt gypped because it was just like, I felt like I was pouring all this into this other person and they were like, well, yeah, but if you were going through the same shit, I'd be off in La La Land. I wouldn't be like fighting to
and
the death.
And that's really hard.
And at first I got resentful over the people that just didn't reciprocate the amount of concern that I had. But then it eventually occurred to me, like, no, you just need to care about your fucking self, at least with the where those people are concerned,
right.
And make yourself the priority. And I was telling Gigi last week, it was either last week or a couple weeks ago, like, now I have these checks and balance moments, which I'm sure I'm fine, but I have these moments where I'm like, fuck, am I just like this stone cold bitch that just doesn't give a fuck about anybody? Because I do so much more than I did the first 30 years of my life, make myself a priority over others. And mm-hmm. I worry that I don't care enough about other people, that I'm not considering enough what other people are going through, because, because like I have friends who are going through like breakups. I have people that are going through like, you know, someone close to them died or, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm like empathetic and I contact them every week to make sure they're okay. And I have like, you know, I show up to funerals and I show up to whatever, but old me would have been like way more like extra about it.
Yeah.
Right.
And because I'm not being extra, I have these moments where I'm like, am I just, because I'm spending so much more time, like, I'm here for you, but also I have stand up and I have my podcast and I have work and I have my boyfriend and I have my family and I have my cats and I, like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So there's these moments where I'm like, am I not doing enough to be a good person to this other person? Or is this the healthy level that's achieved and I was just doing way too much from before?
And it's the latter.
Yeah.
Like, you were doing too much. And that's what I started to realize. That's why I was like, put the phone down.
Yeah.
And like,
know that it's okay.
Everything's going to be fine. And, you know, if they need you, they will call.
Yeah. Yeah.
And even if they do call, there's not going to be anything that I can do sometimes.
And the thing is, there is things you can do just from the perspective of response. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Just saying like, yeah, whatever you fucking need. Just the idea or the notion that knowing like there's someone on the other end of that that's like, whatever you need, tell me what it is and I'll give it to you. Like, that's all mm-hmm. I really need sometimes when I'm going through really harsh shit. I don't even need a specific tangible thing. I just need to know like, oh,
somebody's
shit,
got
there's
your back.
Someone that cares about me enough.
Yeah, you don't need a solution. You just want to know someone's there.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Because there are times, because the world is massive and no one fucking cares about you when you step up. One of my favorite lines, I just watched the Chris Rock special the other mm-hmm. day.
Love.
I don't know why everything Chris, I feel like I was reincarnated from like a black comedian. Like, I feel like I was like Richard Pryor in another life, because like my political and sexual and everything identities is all wrapped up in like every black comedian right now that is like black male comedian. That
wait,
is like,
wait a minute. Hold on a minute.
Jeremy's going to call me.
Hold the phone.
So you're homophobic is what you're trying to tell me.
I'm self-hating. No, but it's like, and that's the thing. Like, when he or Chris Rock or anybody talks about like the transsexual, transgender, trans anything agenda of like just like making that more of a priority over like racial things, mm-hmm. like it's like that's kind of how I feel about it. Like, it's very hard to compare the idea that like you're not allowed to use bathrooms versus they were not allowed to use water fountains, restaurants, mm-hmm. anything. You know what I mean?
Right.
I don't like that idea that it's been compared apples to apples.
Not apples to apples.
And BJ knows this full well. Like, BJ is like my like go-to. Like, I told her, I was like, you're the alpha fag hag. Like, I'm allowed to say these things because if you give me permission, I'm allowed to say it. And she's going to listen to this and be like, no!
Excuse me, boss. Can I say faggot again?
She's like, you're bisexual. You're allowed to say dyke. Because that was the thing we were talking about. Like, there's this girl on YouTube who was like, she was referenced. She apparently used TRANNY in a video from like 7 years ago. And she's still getting people like, fuck you, go to hell, you should die. And she's like, no, I'm sorry, I said it. And they're like, you should still die.
Yeah.
And she's still getting all that stuff.
Well, because these are young kids doing shit like that. And they don't understand that people should grow and change.
Right. So I don't remember where I was going with this. But ultimately, like, Chris Rock had this really great point that I don't remember now because I got off on a tangent. But he had a really great point. What were we talking about? Like, the idea that what?
Trans and...
Well, so it was before that. We were talking about... I don't know. It doesn't matter. I'll listen back to it and I'll be like, fuck, that was what I was
totally
gonna say.
I totally lost it.
Yeah.
But he had a really great point about... I don't know. He made a ton of great points about relationships and just gun control and...
Oh, like kind of having, like, space? Like, not... Like the balance.
Oh, well, just like he tells his kids, like when they step out of the house the other day, like no one fucking
cares. No one gives a fuck about you.
No one gives a single fuck about you and what
and
you
some
do.
People in this house.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so the idea that like even like your closest loved ones don't necessarily give as many fucks about you as they should. It is nice. It is refreshing knowing that when like literally 99.99999% of the world is like either against you or thinks that like you're just expendable to have that person that says like, no, I would probably die if something happened to you. You know what I mean? Like know that there is at least like a group of 2, 3, 4, 5 people that are out there. And that's what keeps me going all every day, ultimately.
Right.
Is knowing that there are people that it's just like, you know, and that, and I think that's kind of like my goal too, is like, that's what keeps me going. So that's why I'm so like lovey dovey with people. And it makes people really super uncomfortable, but I'm like, no, honestly, like I would die if you weren't here. Or furthermore, I would be really unhappy if you weren't here, you know, that kind of thing. So anybody I know that's going through like a hard time, like, I don't say that just to be like trite. I say it because it's like, no, genuinely, like I would be upset if you weren't here because like I rely on you for X, Y, and Z. And it's not, and the thing is, sometimes I'll posit in a really pragmatic way. Like, no, I need you to tell me like what the fuck's going on. Like whether or not like that's a selfish thing or not, like I still need that person.
I don't know. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing to need to tell somebody that, because it's like you're not only cared about, but you're useful.
Right.
And that's
being useful. I love the idea of being useful.
Look, sometimes you need that, because there are times when it's like nobody fucking gives a shit about me.
Yep.
And
it wouldn't matter if I were gone tomorrow. And so to know that like you're filling like a space, or you're performing a task that someone only needs you to fill, like just being useful, I think,
right,
in and of itself, like an important thing. I really had fun doing this conversation, which is why we're running 10 minutes over schedule. Jeremy Shear, we're going to be coming out with this probably beginning of April.
All right.
Mid-April. Is there anything going on with you around that time?
Yes, I will be mid-April. Let's see. I will get out my handy-dandy calendar.
Notebook.
Because I know that I have stuff going on in April. I've got, I will be at Cam's Corners, Wednesday, April 25th, with Spider Jones and SX1 Entertainment.
Yay, my partner.
With, Sad Boys Social Club.
Yeah,
we'll be doing, another short set there. Doors at 7:30, I think.
I think so, yes.
$5 to get in. And, then in early May, May 13th, Sad Boys will be at Bop Stop. That is a Sunday. I am working to do some other things with that show, so it may be bigger than just Sad Boys, but it's going to be a conversation which will be completed by the time this episode is released.
Is that the late night?
Okay. No, it's not the late night laughs thing.
Okay.
We got our own night.
Oh, okay.
I like
Bop Stop as a venue.
Yeah.
Because I had sex in the green room.
See, I heard it was in the shower.
So it wasn't in the shower. It was in the bathroom area. Gigi's making a face and it's hysterical. So what's funny is there's an area. So there's the green room and then there's like a bathroom.
Yeah.
And the bathroom has like a toilet and a shower. So we weren't in the specific shower, but we were in like the bathroom.
Yeah.
And the bathroom floor is made of like gravel. Like,
ooh,
it makes no sense. Like,
Adam, when you got on your knees, you're an idiot.
Adam had a really good theory about
maybe
like,
prevent
it
that.
It seems like legitimate. That's what we wondered, because he had this whole theory about how like maybe this is granite that just wasn't like finished so that people wouldn't be fucking around.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the thing. We were like bare knee and we're like, ow, 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 ow. So like there was never actual consummation because we were just in too much pain. Like, we tried so hard.
Well, there was residue of attempted consummation, and that's what I ended up hearing about.
Oh, God.
That's so great. All right, so anyway, you guys are doing a show at Bop Stop.
Yeah. Yep. And if you sniff in the right spot, you can tell where Jeff has been.
Sniff in the right
so
spot.
Great.
Oh, man.
But,
I'm so proud. Like, I'm so proud of, like, I'm a legend at Bop Stop now. Like, I was in a fucking Mothra costume, too. That was, like, the best part.
Yeah, that's why it was funny. Because it's, like, it's Godzilla and Mothra.
Godzilla and Mothra are fucking in the green bathroom at Bop Stop. It's fantastic.
Boy.
So many Japanese people died that night.
Or at least rolled over.
Geez, where can we find you on social media?
Nowhere. No,
this will never air.
This will not be heard by anyone. You can find me on Instagram at ggchick, g.g.chick.
And do you have a social media share that you want to promote or no?
At Dirty Shear on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Tumblr.
Perf. I am at EpicFaul, E-P-I-C-F-A-U-L, on Twitter and Instagram. You can find me at Avenue Tap House every Sunday at 7 p.m. First Sunday of every month is an open mic, so come on out. Last three Sundays of every month are book showcase. Send me a fucking video if I don't know who the hell you are. I'm sorry, I would like to be taken seriously someday, so fuck you. Thank OK Pants. OK Pants on Twitter, Instagram, all of those things, for doing our logo. Pete Milk for probably falling asleep during this whole nonsense.
Thanks,
in the back.
Pete.
But we love
it's
your
homie
cat.
For homies here.
It is homie as shit. So we love that he allows us into his home every day to do this shit. Above Below Entertainment and Lousy Weather Media for being our networks and allowing us to pull this shit off. What should we do for our sound effect today? Do we have like dueling ham horns? Because you guys both have the ham horns.
We totally could. let's see here. What do you think?
Sheer. What do you want to do? You guys both have the ham horn.
That's
you guys want to do. All right, I'm gonna let you guys do that. Okay.
Wait, which one was that? Uncle Nick.
Uncle Nick.
Okay, I knew it. Wait, hold on. Okay, let me get this on. Okay.
Okay, love you. Bye.